You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.
We're back with another thrilling episode of the Toil of Hell radio show. I am Joe Thrashenkill. With me I've got 365 Days of Horror. Say hi, buddy. And as you can tell by the operatic falsettos, this is a show that's going to focus a little bit on power metal and actually doesn't feature us like very much at all.
It's for the best. We were lucky enough to have our friend Nina from A Sound of Thunder help us out with today's interview. She's interviewing Tobias Sammet from Edguy and Avantasia fame, and she's like a really big fan, and you could kind of hear that in the interview. And it was only supposed to be like 25 minutes long, and they think they spoke to like close to an hour. So that's really awesome.
Yeah, and this is a fun interview. All kinds of things covered, including finding cocaine in the ceiling of a nightclub.
Well, where else would it be?
Yeah, exactly. That's where I store mine. So I figure that before we get into it, maybe you and I could chop it up a little bit. Maybe talk some power metal before we get to the main course.
Yeah, you know, for all of the metal talking that we do, we never really touch on power metal all that much. So we're overdue.
Yeah, I guess it's maybe just like the people that I'm friends with on social media. They cover all the power metal for me.
Obnoxiously.
Yes, exactly. I've never really gotten into the genre because it seems so like over the top nerdy. But I've kind of come around a little bit in recent years, given more things a try and being more, I guess, accepting of the over-the-top vocals, you know?
Yeah, power metal is interesting for me because I'm always willing to give it a try more than some other genres. Like, we have every Tuesday on Toilet of Hell, we have Toilet Tuesday, where we just show what albums have come out this week. And Spear, who puts it together, helpfully lists whatever genre of the album or the band is next to it. And whenever I see power metal, I'm more willing to give that a listen over something like black metal.
Yeah, the first thing that I click on Toilet Tuesday is always Lolbutz.
Well, yeah, you have to get that out of the way. You have to understand how something is Lolbutz, and then you move on to the real music.
Yeah, but there have been a lot of acts, new bands that are kind of like covering some of the ground that 80s heavy metal bands did. And in those days, I think it was kind of a mesh where you had those clean operatic vocals before going full on into, you know, later what would be the entire roster of Napalm.
Yeah, well, I think with Napalm is there's a little bit more folk in there than like just straight power metal.
Yeah, that's probably about right. I don't know. Some of the stuff, because there's more, what is the word for it? Pomp with this. You got costumes. You've got like a stage show. And that's not really something that you would ever get with like, you know, death metal.
Yeah, and I think with a genre like power metal, it's more accepting of having kind of other subgenres being blended in, like folk or straight heavy metal, or even like some thrash power metal kind of sounds blended in together, more than some of the more staunch genres that kind of came before it.
Yeah, no, that sounds about right to me. I don't think anybody in that, well, I'm thinking, of course, about Randall Thor. I was going to say, I don't think that anybody will call you like a poser for blending an element into it, but there certainly is at least one person out there that will.
Great.
But yeah, so can you tell me a little bit about Edguy and Avantasia?
So Edguy had been kicking around since the early 90s, like 1992, and they started when they were teenagers, like 14, 15 years old, and by the time they were 17 or 18, they were signed to AFM Records, who are still around to this day. They're a well-known heavy metal, power metal-leaning record label, which is kind of incredible to start that young, get signed that young, and to still be around and really be one of the biggest power metal bands around.
Yeah, no, that is incredibly impressive. How many lineup changes have they had then at the time?
One.
Incredible.
Just one. Just the drummer left in 1998. I think they had someone come in to do a studio album, and then they have their replacement drummer. But they've all been together since the early 90s.
That is so crazy to me. Like, it's like looking at looking up a celebrity on Wikipedia and finding out that they've been with the same spouse for like 30 or 40 years. Like, that's unheard of.
Yeah, you know they're kind of normal then. Whereas, you know, some people have four or five different spouses, or some bands just rotate through singers like it's nothing. Motor Grader. even like Black Sabbath or even Iron Maiden, like massive, massive metal bands still are not able to keep their shit together. And Ed Guy has.
I guess when you have chemistry that works, you gotta keep that fire alive. You gotta go to marriage counseling. You gotta make one night a week that's your date night.
I think it might also help that it's a power metal band. I think cut from a different cloth, knowing that you're kind of over the top from the beginning, I think helps. And it's not really jumping from trend to trend. Like, I don't think Ed Guy or Avantasia ever had a new metal era.
I don't know enough to verify that, but I want to go through the discography now.
And his Tobias's other band, Avantasia, is like more, I guess, of a rock opera. It's still in the same vein, but whereas like Ed Guy is like power metal over the top, this is like way over the top, but it's still in the fun way.
Very cool. I got to see Nina's band, A Sound of Thunder, once when they came through Austin. And it was, you know, again, this isn't really my scene at all, but man, they put on an incredible show. And the way that she's fangirling in this interview, it's clear that she's incredibly impressed by this band as well. So I figure, I don't know, maybe I'll have to give this a shot.
I do have a slightly related Ed Guy funny story, if you'd permit me a
minute.
So I went to Hellfest in New Jersey, the American hardcore metalcore version, in the summer of 2004, I believe. And I went all 3 days, and it's a lot of metalcore, it's a lot of hardcore. And just looking at the lineup, you know, you kind of check off what you want to see, and then there's some downtime, so you're like, oh, I guess I can see these guys. And I saw that Ed Guy was playing Hellfest. I'm like, oh, I know who they are. Like, it'd be really nice to see a power metal band and some melody and something different from what I've seen for the past couple days. And they were playing in this like tiny, tiny room, like the smallest stage there. So I saw the band that played before they were supposed to go on. Like, I got there early. I'm like, I want to get up close to see this because this is going to be a lot of fun. Sit through that band. And then I wait up front in the tiny little stage as the band's setting up. And I kind of notice, I'm like, there's really not a lot going on here. It's like just a drum set and a guitarist and a bassist. This is kind of weird, but okay, I'll check it out. And the room starts to fill up. It gets real packed. And the band plays their first song, and it's like techie, grindy, you know, that sort of fast, frantic sound. And I check the schedule. It's not Ed Guy. It's Ed Gain. So I went, oh, okay, stayed for one more song and then walked off.
Yeah, I wanna hear the Ed Gain, Ed Guy split.
Yeah, let's do it. 7 inches. Like, they can cover each other's songs and maybe like trade vocalists on an original. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah, 7 inches of Ed. Love it.
Gross.
Well, folks, I know that this one's kind of a change of pace if you're used to yeah, listen to us chuckleheads chop it up every week, but I think that you'll enjoy this interview a lot. And we'll be back with Breno here shortly, so look out for that. And in the meantime, please enjoy the interview.
Looks like we're being recorded now. So how are you today? Like, everything going good?
Everything going terrific. I'm speaking a lot about an amazing, legendary album that is going to come out in 6 weeks, and it's going to write, 5 weeks actually only, and it's going to write heavy metal history. So things could be better.
I can't tell you how excited I am about this album. I don't know if you know this, but like 10 years ago when you came to the US with Ed Guy, I opened for you in like 2009, I think. And that was like a life-changing gig for me because I finally got to see you live. So I just wanted to let you know that before I get into the questions so that I can like fangirl to you before.
All right. Were you just opening for one night or was it the whole tour?
No, it was just one night. It was in Virginia, you know, Washington, D.C., basically at Jack's.
Okay, Springfield.
Yes.
The place with the greatest backstage area in the world.
No backstage area
at all. Yes. Yeah, that was really, where's the backstage? Oh, you're in it right now. No, I'm standing in front of the club. Yes, that is in the backstage. Wow.
But it's a great place, you know. Yeah, it's gone.
It's a great place, and it's always the crowd there is always so good. It's always, I mean, it's a very tiny place, but it's always been sold out and always packed, and it's an amazing crowd. And, you know, you can play all kinds. You can play the best place in the world, and I don't want to talk bad about Jack's. You know, it's a great club and legendary and everything, but you can play the best place in the world. It's if the audience is not so good. I didn't want to say. Can I say the word in,
yes,
in your...
Yes, oh, honey, yes. This is called the Toilet of Hell. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah, but toilet is still, you know, it's like it's not the shithole of hell. It's the Toilet of Hell. You can say that on the air, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, you can play in the best place in the world, you know. The crowd is shit, then the gig is shit. And that's why, you know, I prefer playing in small places with great people as opposed to the other way around.
Oh, that's good to know. It's unfortunate, but Jax is gone now. And I tell
you
what, yeah, it's gone. They actually made it beautiful at one point. Somebody bought it. They named it Empire, but they just didn't do very well. And unfortunately, it's gone. So I wished I could tell you guys to come back. But man.
So they tore down the place?
No, they sold it, I think, to the restaurant next door. I think they do, like, I don't know, like show. I honestly don't know what they do, but it's not, yeah, they don't do heavy metal there anymore, so.
Okay, it's, because if they tore down the place, I would have said they just wanted to extend the backstage area.
Give it a backstage. Oh, that would have been great. You know, I haven't even started the interview, but I just want to let you know one real quick. When they did tear it, when they did like try to make it nice again, like rebuild it, they found so much cocaine in the ceiling.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, that place had a funny history.
Okay, yeah, that's, yeah, these kinds of places we play, yes.
Okay, so now I'm going to actually start the interview. So before we get started, I'm going to introduce myself real quick, and then we'll go right in. You are ready?
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, great. Hello, Tobias. I'm Nina Asagueto with A Sound of Thunder and The Toilet of Hell. How are you today?
I'm doing very, very well in the Toilet of Hell. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. We're so glad that you were able to do this interview. I'm a big fan of Avantasia and, of course, Ed Guy. I think when the very first Avantasia album was released, it was 2001, and it was one of my most favorite albums. Like, I was just getting into heavy metal. I was just, like, learning about the world, and it was one of the most major influences for me to pursue a heavy metal band myself. So can you tell me, what influenced you in those early days? Like, why did you decide to do Avantasia separate from Ed Guy?
Thank you, first of all. That's very nice. My influence, in general, musically, I was always a huge fan of AC/DC and Kiss. That's where it all started with. And then there was Iron Maiden and Deep Purple and Halloween and Def Leppard and Dio, you know, the classic stuff. I've always also been into classical music, but not a real connoisseur of the different variations of a certain piece of music, you know, like these people, these very picky people say, oh, there's this one conductor from Denmark in the 19th century and his recording of Beethoven's Ninth is a little bit better than, you know, I'm not really into not like that. So, Why did I start Avantasia? It's a good question. I believe that I felt I needed to break out of a routine back in the day. Okay. We had just done 4 albums with Ed Guy. And when you're in a band, of course, it's great to be in a band and it's great to be in an up-and-coming band. But of course, you are in a lot of parameters are preset. And if you want to excite yourself, you sometimes have to jump in at the deep end and do things that are new. And I had the dream of recording an album based on a story, like a rock opera or something like that, a metal opera, which I ultimately called it.
Yeah.
And work with my idols and heroes and with other singers and share the vocals. And it was very, very demanding. I was jumping in at the deep end, and of course I wrote these songs. And all of a sudden, before that, I had been in a sheltering haven of a band that I was leading and fronting, and I was also writing most of the songs for that band and organizing the stuff. But at the same time, of course, as I said, a lot of parameters were set. So all of a sudden, I felt myself being in charge of the likes of Henio from Gamma Ray and Marcus, the bass player in Halloween, one of my favorite bands, and Alex Holzwart, drummer of many bands, amongst others Rhapsody and Angra, and I was working with Kai Hansen and Michael Kiske. So it was Marcus Groskopf, Kai Hansen, and Michael Kiske in one band, and I was in charge. So that was all. It was too good to be true, but it was also a certain responsibility I felt. And I it wasn't until I was halfway into the project when I realized, oh my God, what have I got myself into? And I felt a little responsibility. And then it all developed and it turned out good. And all I had hoped for was to recoup the expenses and not make a complete fool out of myself by being responsible for a record label going bankrupt. It went through the roof. It sold pretty well. It sold amazingly. It has just, those two records have just gone diamond in Europe. And it's been really amazing. And of course, hadn't I done those albums, I think, hadn't I gathered that experience that I gathered doing that album as a musician, but also as a character, as a man, I think I couldn't have written The Scarecrow or even Hellfire Club or Mandrake. I think these albums are results in a way of the experience that I had gathered doing that Avantasia record. I had been even Ed Guy had been an up-and-coming band, but a very, very, on a much smaller scale. And once the album got out, the Avantasia album, all of a sudden, when we did the subsequent Ed Guy album, everybody was expecting something, because it was that guy who just did Avantasia, and
I see.
That opened a lot of doors for us. So
that makes a lot of sense, because I tell you the truth, I knew about Avantasia before I knew about Ed Guy, and I heard the first Avantasia album. Of course, I got the second one. I love them. And then I was like, oh, I didn't realize that, you know, he was in another band, so I had to look up Ed Guy, and I was absolutely hooked. I mean, I've been a huge fan of Ed Guy ever since. So that does make sense
to
me, that when you work with, you know, other musicians, you get the word out. So that makes a lot of sense. And I do have a question when it comes to songwriting, because you mentioned, you know, that working with Avantasia influenced how you write music for Ed Guy. When it comes to songwriting, do you specifically gear what you're working on to Ed Guy or Avantasia? Like when you start songwriting, do you say, oh, this is definitely an Avantasia song, or this is definitely an Ed Guy song? Or do you think about it before that?
Sometimes I subconsciously feel it. I try to work only at one thing or on one thing at a time, I have to say. But of course, I subconsciously feel what it's right for, because also, I mean, with Edgar, we are five band members, and that's great because you know exactly what to expect, and you know exactly what we are capable of. Me as a singer, and also the others on their respective instrument. It's just it's a very, as I said, the parameters.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying. You're good.
Parameters are preset, and so certain things will not work. I write songs the way I write them, but certain things will not work with that guy. They will not function the way they would function with Avantasia, because with Avantasia I can get anybody in to play something or sing something. It's just it's more open to into several directions. On the other hand, there are certain songs, like a song like Trinidad or Fucking with Fire, you know,
yes.
That purely hedonistic stuff that sometimes comes up, and that you know, that I don't want to say joker that comes out, but
yes.
Sometimes you do things and it's just pure hedonism, pure fun.
Yes.
These kinds of things I could never do with Avantasia. You know, it's impossible. I couldn't do a song like I said, Fucking with Fire, or also Lavatory Love Machine, or
yes.
Love Tiger. Those lyrics, I wrote them both. I write Avantasia stuff, I write Edguy stuff, but certain things I couldn't do with Avantasia.
That makes a lot of sense. And I just absolutely love how you can go from one thing to another. I'm a huge fan of Space Police. that whole album took me for such surprise when I heard it the first time, because I was listening to it at work. And I was just, you know, I was like, oh, this album just came out. I'm going to listen to it. This is fun. And I tell you what, when I heard England the first time, I was just wearing my headphones in a little cubicle and I was laughing so much. People thought I was crazy, but I was so in love with that album. And we listen to it all the time to this day. And I just love the duality that you're able to express as a songwriter, where you can do both of those things anytime you want.
Thank you. I really like Space Police. It's a very, very, very good album. And I think it's an underrated album as well, because I know a lot of people think, especially here in Germany, I don't know about the U.S., but here in Germany, it's a lot of people listen to a song, they hear a song title like Space Police, and then they see Burt Reynolds on the cover or Tom Selleck or whoever, and they think, oh, that's ridiculous. They want to be funny. It's goofy. Actually, the song Space Police is not goofy. It's a very Frank Zappa-ish take on the music scene and the discussion about different genres and about the do's and don'ts in the rock and roll scene, which is really weird to me, that certain things you are not allowed to do as a rock band. What the fuck? I started playing that type of music because I wanted to be allowed to do everything. And that's it's a very, 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 it's not a pure piss take. It's a very, very razor sharp piss take. And that's why I never really got that album. Is not goofy. I think that album is straight to the point. Space Police is one of my favorite Edgar records. It was a difficult time for me personally when the album came together, because it was put together under a lot of stress and I had a lot of weight on my shoulders personally. But the outcome, I think, is really, really, I will defend that album absolutely.
Honestly, if you hadn't told me that, I really had no idea that it was underrated, because when I first heard it, I thought it was the greatest, and I played it for my band. Everybody in my band loves it. My husband, oh my God, that is his favorite album of yours, to be perfectly honest. He loves that album, so I never would have thought that people didn't take to it. But what you bring up makes a lot of sense,
you know,
when it comes to the rules of rock and roll. You know, when they say you cannot make something funny, or you can't make something serious and funny at the same time. We hear that a lot. Can you go into that a little bit more?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, people have a problem with other people being honest. You know, you have to play, not play a role. You have, and I don't want to necessarily say you have to put on an act, but people expect certain things of
yes.
other people.
That does
people
make sense.
want their favorite artist or their best friend or you know, their the person they have to deal with or they have to work with or they talk to. They want these people, or a lot of people want other people to be a reflection of what they think the other one should be or who the other one should be. It's about wrong expectations. And in metal, it's, you know, metal is a, some people have a very, very, very strict conception of what their metal has to be like in order to be considered true heavy metal.
Yes.
Not true heavy metal, not like furry loincloth. But you know, it's and to me that doesn't make sense. It's just, you know, disappointment is not about somebody delivering something wrong. It's about your own expectations.
Yes.
And
yeah.
And that's why, you know, the older I get, I have to say, the more I get problems with fulfilling expectations, because I never really want to let anybody down. I don't want to hurt anybody, and I don't want to offend anybody. But the thing is, I just don't want to do what others expect for the sake of doing what they expect. I don't want to do the opposite, you know.
That makes
but
so
I just
much sense.
Want to do whatever I feel right. And in heavy metal, I think a lot of people know exactly what they want, and they, you know, I talked to Jeff Tate about it.
Mm-hmm.
And because we talked about, because we all have our albums that everybody asks about, and you do continuations of those albums.
Mm-hmm.
And you, people want you to repeat your past. In heavy metal, people are very, very traditional, which is good. I like tradition. I like England for the reason, because it's, for that reason, it's so traditional. They embrace tradition. But in music, everybody wants you to repeat what you've done in the past. And people don't understand that back then when you did those albums that they love, that they have become acquainted with, that they have experienced things along to while listening to those albums, that they have made memories to. People want you to repeat those albums, but they don't get the point that back then when you did those albums, you didn't follow any formula or rule. You didn't repeat anything when you made the original. And that's the only spirit of creating art for me, is to do something that excites you and not repeat something bite-sized just so people have the feeling that this sounds familiar to
yes.
them. And, you know, everybody says, oh, please do, let's say, the Metal Opera Part 3. If I did the Metal Opera Part 3 now, everybody would say, they would either say, it's not as good as Part 1 and Part 2,
yeah,
because they would expect to have the same feeling that they have now, thinking about those old albums that they have made memories to. And if you try to repeat the style and even rip off the songs, people would say, well, it's a rip-off. Yes, of course. What did you ask me to do? That's what you asked me to do.
Yes.
And so in heavy metal, I think a lot of people really know exactly what they want.
Yes.
But the good thing about Avantasia and Edguy also, I believe, is that I managed to chase away all the stubborn and narrow-minded fans already. So those who are left now, they are totally fine, and they are really, they have capacity for suffering because of becoming, getting something that they did not expect.
Yes, absolutely. And you have definitely held on to a lot of fans because your tours are doing so well. I mean, every time I post about the fact that you're even coming to the United States as Avantasia, the first time you did, I think everyone was so shocked that everyone immediately bought tickets. Like, that was... that was so surprising that you would bring all the vocalists. And I mean, I can't tell you how much that meant to people here in the U.S. because a lot of the time, you know, we don't get to see our favorite bands. It's so hard to come and play in the U.S., especially right now. So I'm so glad.
Tell me about it. We are trying. We are approaching our visas right now.
Oh boy!
But it's gonna work. We will come over. But
I'm so glad.
I tell you, Donald really doesn't want us over there.
Oh, no, tell me about it. I don't think he wants anybody over here.
Well, you know, he just wants to play.
Yeah.
He just wants to play.
I know.
It's become really. I'm not into politics, and I don't want to talk about it. But it's really quite something, you know. By the time we hit American soil, you can make sure we haven't only rehearsed hard, we haven't only recorded hard, we haven't only practiced hard. No, we have also. Applied for a visa real hard.
That was so hard. You know, I gotta say, the one thing that I love about performing in Europe is that we don't have to do those things. Like, I don't know how you guys are able to do it so easily in Europe, where you just go over and play. But and we can't do that.
It's really hard, you know.
It's
really hard to imagine that our economics, how they still work, even though we don't make it a nightmare for everybody who wants to come in.
You know? Yeah, well, you would think that not making it a nightmare would be a good thing, because then you get more people coming in and out and bringing in more money. But I don't know.
Well, you know, it's going to work because we come inhabitants of the United States. We come with peaceful intention, and they will know that we come with peaceful intentions. We come with beautiful music, and we bring a couple of your countrymen back into your country, because Eric Martin and Jeff Tate, and also Adrian Cohen, great singer, they will tour around the whole world with us.
Yes.
So they'll see. Just some of our of their countrymen will bring some friends, which
Absolutely.
We are.
Can I ask you, now that you're talking about the vocalists,
mm-hmm.
have you ever been starstruck by somebody that you've played, that you've gotten to play on Avantasia, like Jeff Tate or even Candace Knight? Have you ever just like fangirled the way that I do? Have you ever felt that way toward another musician?
Of course, you know. Many occasions. First time I was on stage next to, I remember there was an incident when we played South America, and it hit me out of the blue. We had already done a couple of other countries in that lineup, but right side of me there was Kai Hansen, left side of me there was Michael Kiske. Ooh. For the first time on one stage together in 20 years in South America on stage, Michael Kiske for the first time in South America, and I was in the middle, and all of a sudden I realized, oh, I have to really watch myself so I don't burst into tears. That was such a moving moment for me myself. And of course, I remember when I first played with Jeff, I introduced him on stage and I said, ladies and gentlemen, it wasn't planned. It just came out. It was, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a hologram. This is fucking Jeff Tate.
That's very
and he lost it on stage. He was laughing. It was, of course, I mean, as a young boy, of course, I listened to Keeper of the Seven Keys and Operation Mindcrime or Rage for Order back and forth. And
wow.
you all of a sudden you're on stage with these people, you work with these people. That's great, and it's a very, very great gift, because you can also learn something from those people. They're experienced singers and experienced musicians, and you're standing next to them, you know, 10 weeks in a row, every night you get vocal lessons from the best of the best. Eric Martin, I mean, it was really funny when we played one show, I think it was even my home show, he just sang the first four or five words of To Be With You, and then I realized it was just on stage, just going, hold on, little girl. He just did that, and it sounded so Eric Martin.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I realized, that's Eric Martin, who had a number one hit in, 12, 15, 20 countries? So really, it's really flattering. And on a different note, I was really starstruck when we toured with Aerosmith here in Germany. I was so starstruck. I was in one room with Steven Tyler, and we were the only ones in the room, and I did not dare to say hi.
Oh, no.
We were his support act, and he knew it, and probably I don't know if he thought, what an arrogant prick, but he didn't talk to me either. So we both stood there pretending nobody else was there.
Oh, no!
And I just didn't dare it. It didn't get over my lips. Hey, Steven, because I thought, there was so many things going through my head, because I'm a huge fan of Aerosmith and Steven Tyler, and there were so many things going through my head. What do you do? Do you shake his hand? Will you go there and we'll say, hey, Steven, nice pants. No, you don't say that.
Can you
imagine? Hey, Steven, nice show last night. No, he knows it's a nice show because you don't say nice. Hey, Steven, great show last night. How many people tell Steven Tyler he played a great show last night? Because he only plays great shows. So, and then, you know, somebody, hey, Toby, we got to go, sound check or whatever. And then I went, and that was the last time I was in one room with him. So I missed out on that chance.
You know, when you think about it, though, you do know how many people have probably felt the same way about you. Like, you have probably been the Steven Tyler of the room at some point, and somebody has wanted to say to you, oh my God, I want to say hi to him so bad, but I don't know what to say, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to freak him out or anything. So just think about it in that way, that you have been in this situation and you never knew it. Can you imagine that?
Not really. I don't know. I have no idea. You know, anybody can approach me. I'm just me, you know. Never been anyone else, so I know about me, and I didn't think that way yet.
Yeah, no, I really want you to think about that right now, because that's definitely how I felt when you called me.
My husband told me,
do not freak out in this interview, because, you know, he's great, and I know how much you look up to him, but I want you to be able to talk to him. So I really had to put myself in your shoes. So I want you to think about that in the future. If you ever see Steven Tyler again, you better say hi.
Yeah, I will do so. Hey, Steven, what's up? What's he? That wasn't really your best night last night, was it?
Amazing. So can I ask you, what is maybe... somebody that you're interested in working with in the future? I know you're about to release a new album in like 5 weeks, but I know musicians, we always look toward the future. We just finished one thing.
I got the next album in the pipeline already.
So who do you want to work with that you haven't been able to work with yet?
Bruce Dickinson. It's never going to happen because Rod Smallwood doesn't want Bruce to do anything else. But it's, you know, it's good. Bruce is so busy. He's flying airplanes, and he's a nice guy. I met him a few times already. Mm-hmm. He always seemed very nice and down to earth, but of course he's very, very busy. And, well, down to earth, of course, that's always a matter of what you consider to be down to earth. He's flying planes and owning an airplane company, and he's fencing and singing in the best heavy metal band in the world.
Yes.
Apart from that, Paul Stanley,
ooh,
Gene Simmons. Yeah, I love him.
Ooh,
I love
that
him.
That would be interesting. I now I'm trying to imagine what that might sound like. Paul Stanley and that would definitely be interesting.
Absolutely. I met them twice. It was the most exciting 20 seconds of my life.
Wow.
No, it
That's
wasn't.
Great.
I mean, it was just, I met them when I met Eric, when I said hi to Eric. I met them a few times after the show, before the show, actually. I would want to work with them, but they're so busy, and now they're doing their farewell tour, and, you know, I never know if that's going to happen. I don't really have a bucket list, I have to say, because a lot of people have the misconception of Avantasia that it's a collection of, that I have this bucket list and I'm just putting check marks behind names, and that's not the case. I never wanted to make Avantasia gimmicky. I always wanted to have the song in the center of the center of attention. The most important thing is the song, and then you have to have the right vocalists to sing that song and to add their personality to the song and make it better.
That makes sense.
And that's to me, because, you know, now mentioning a list of names, which in fact I just did, but it's disrespectful to all the great, amazing, I've worked with legendary musicians that have amazing voices that are truly inspiring. I mean, on this new record, there is Jorn Lande, there's Ronnie Atkins of the Pretty Maids, terrific singer, Eric Martin of Mr. Big, there's Hansi Kirsch of Blind Guardian, Mille Petrozza of Creator, Candice Knight, and have I forgotten anyone? Micah Kiske, Jeff Tate. So, you know, these people, they have big names, absolutely, but they have not only great names, they also have great voices, and I really think they do the songs justice and they make the songs better, and that's why I'm really happy with the people that I'm allowed to work with right now. So I don't want to really dream about other names. If there's the right song for a certain singer, I certainly will find somebody I want to work with, somebody else I want to work with. But so far, this album has got the strongest lineup I can think of.
Wow, that's so incredible. I love the fact that you can just list off these people I know every heavy metal band fan listening to this, they probably recognize at least 90% of those names. And the fact that you can list them off as not only recognizable, but incredibly talented musicians is just, I think it's great. And we can tell by the way that you, I want to say cast, by the way that you cast for these albums, we can tell that it's not just you like, oh, well, I want famous people. You obviously are casting people based on the song. So it's like song first, and then who will fit this song. And then you're picking people based on their skill and their talent. And it just, I want to say people love you, not just because of the way you write your music, but because we can tell that you love the product that you're creating. That's a big deal for everybody listening to your music.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Now, here's something that I was really curious about. So I you know, of course I follow the Avantasia Facebook page, and I saw recently there was a post and it said, Avantasia is not modern. What about you? And when everyone complains about the music business going down the drain, we have old school copy protection. And I was like, that sounds like something that my guitarist would write, because my guitarist is like, he runs the Facebook page and he's all about the business side. So I was like, I wonder if you wrote that. Did you write that?
Yeah. I do a lot of my Facebook page myself, which is very, very time consuming. And sometimes it's really stressful because you work also like it functions like once people realize that it's yourself complaining about, you know, criticism, you're a magnet for idiots as well.
Yes, absolutely.
I shouldn't have said that.
No,
I don't have that many idiots posting to the page. But honestly, I like it. I like to say things myself and also stand up for what I believe in. And that's what I wrote. I wrote about the copy protection because there's 99.9% nice people. And it's great to have an interaction with the people that really do care about the music. Of course, sometimes other people post in on our Facebook page. But some of the postings I really do myself, and I answer myself sometimes to people's comments.
that's really good to know.
Because, you know, it's just sometimes it's fun, sometimes it's getting a little too much, and then also Nuclear Blast posts sometimes, and yes, my webmaster. So, but yes, what I meant with copy protection was we have old school copy protection. We have a great physical product that people, because the best copy protection is you put something out that people don't want to copy, but they want to own and possess the original.
Yes.
And that, to me, that's something that the music industry, of course, you can't blame only the music industry for the whole evolution of things, but the music industry never really understood, in my opinion, that it's very counterproductive to decrease the quality of the output material just because you make less money, because that's you will fuel a vicious circle, and that's why I think you should first and foremost, that stands for the music on the album, but also for the for the booklet, for the packaging, for the book, for the photos, for the cover artwork,
oh my goodness,
for everything
yes.
surrounding it, you should deliver something that you would want to possess yourself, that is so convincing that you say, was this a Dio album, or if this was a Kiss album, or whatever your favorite band is, I would want to buy that. I really would want to own that and look at it and hold it and smell it and feel it and put it into my shelf and take it out every second hour, look at it and go through it and smell it and feel it again. If you come up with a product like that, then you have a very good chance that people will not want to be all right, or that people will not be all right with just an MP3 copy of it, but that they want to possess the original thing. And that's how I approach things. I am involved in the whole process. And can you believe, I mean, I don't have a management. I'm negotiating the record contracts. This one I didn't do. I do it all myself. And I also do the quality management, not the quality management, but the art, the artwork of everything. I organize that personally with a graphics designer. It's not the record label that suggests anything. I did everything myself. I corrected every single page of every configuration of this new release. I corrected myself at home, sitting at it, looking at the PDF files and saying, no, this should be a little brighter. No, we should have a different picture here. No, I want a different font. I want a different in a different setting. And now, can you please exchange side page 15 and page 16, stuff like that. And I think if you have such a relation and such a relation to your own product in quotation marks, then you will have a better chance to find people out there that are as crazy about music as you are,
yes,
to really pay for that and get it and buy it because it's worth it. And that's my approach. And that's, I don't, as long as I have got that fire, I think I'm in the right business.
I think so too. And to be honest, I think just about every new up and coming band, I think most of them do the same thing, not because they want to, but because they have to. Because I am a graphic designer, so I understand how much we ask to get paid. So the fact that I do everything for free is great for our band. But would you say that currently in the modern era of music, do you think that other bands at your caliber, do you think that they do the same thing that you do?
I'm not in the position to judge. Probably some do. Some, obviously, if I look at the product, don't do. But you know, I really don't want to judge.
Oh, that's
and I think, of course, I have respect for bands that can't afford doing that. I have respect for bands that can't afford having a 68 pages booklet with liner notes and with photos that were, I, for this record, I took creative breaks. I had creative breaks in England. I went to London to find inspiration. I took a photographer with me to take photos and to just be with me because he's a friend of mine. But so a lot of these things other bands could not afford, and that's why we should not bash anybody because he can't do it. But if you can, you should give something back. You should reinvest the money that you make with your fans to make sure they get a good product in the future as well. And I think that's what I do. And that's not because I feel like Mother Therese, and because I'm just. It's also because that will make a band last in the long term. People can rely on. People can disagree about the style that you play. They can disagree about a song that you have done. That's all up to opinion, but and taste.
Yes.
But I think the quality of something should not be negotiated. It always has to have a certain quality. We can talk about somebody liking a song or not liking a song and blah, blah. That's just, you know. But delivering quality is a matter of respect for your audience. And that's what everybody should understand, respect for yourself too and for your career. Because absolutely, that's the only way to make sure you can have a career in the long term.
Absolutely. And I think it's obvious by the way that you talk about how you work through everything that this is a labor of love. You're not doing this to be a billionaire. I mean, I don't think anybody who goes into heavy metal these days is doing it to be a billionaire. So what would you
say?
No,
but I did it 27 years ago and I did it to be a billionaire.
We missed it. But what would you say to somebody who wants to break into heavy metal these days? Like if somebody listening to this interview right now and he's saying, you know what, I want to do heavy metal. What would you say to that kind of person?
Do it. Do it and be ready to have a lot of capacity for suffering financially and economically. But if you feel it has to be done, it has to be done. And then don't let anybody talk you out of it. I mean, that's the way I approached it. I just did it. Everybody thought it's pretty much impossible to make a living doing it. And I made a very good living out of it. And there was no chance. And if you take advice, make sure you take advice from somebody whose advice matters to you and should matter to you. Don't take advice from people who will tell you, no, it's not going to work because, you know, yes, of course, it's very difficult. And as I said, you have to have a lot of capacity for suffering, but do it.
That makes sense. Okay, so I'm going to take us out of this area and bring us back to the fact that you're about to release an amazing new album on February 15th. I'm super excited about it. And you're about to hit some tour dates in the U.S. I'm interested in finding out what can people that have been a fan of yours and Avantasia for a long time, what can they expect from this new tour?
3-hour shows,
wow.
A great lineup. We'll do pretty much all of the new album or most of the new album, maybe 7 or 8 songs of the new album. And then, I don't know, 15, 16 songs off of the rest of our career. And there will be on tour with me on stage in the U.S. Bob Catley of Magnum, Jeff Tate, formerly Queensryche. There'll be Ronnie Atkins of Pretty Maids, Jorn Landy, Eric Martin of Mr. Big. There will be Herbie Langhans and Olli Hartmann, Sasha Pett, our producer, and also producer for Camelot and Angra and Rhapsody, and famous producer and best guitar player I've ever met in my entire life. Eric Singer once said that Sasha reminds him of Jake E. Lee. And is playing, and it's so true. It's really so true. His rhythm guitar playing is really similar to Jake Lee's playing.
Wow.
So who else is going to be there? There's going to be Felix Ovetka on drums, Miro Rodenberg, legendary keyboard player and arranger, orchestral arranger. We're going to be a big band and a big crew and a big show. And if I wouldn't have my tickets already, I would get one.
Oh, yeah, definitely, definitely. Now, and in the other direction, is there any hope of Ed Guy coming back to the United States soon?
Yes, of course there's hope. There's no plan right now.
Okay. No
because,
plan,
yeah, I mean, well, of course, there's always hope, you know. I mean, I hope winning the lottery one day.
Okay, so we'll put Ed Guy coming to the United States and winning the lottery in the same
No, seriously. I think the chance is much bigger because I don't even play lottery. The thing is, right now there is no plan because I can only do one thing at a time.
Absolutely.
And I was you know, we had just done 10 albums, and I realized that we were also becoming part of a perpetuum mobile, or it seemed to be a perpetuum mobile, but there has always to be somebody who dreams all these things up. Mm-hmm. And I really, really also needed a break from this. We had set everything for the moment. Space Police was as good as it gets. And then we did the Monuments album and the Monuments tour, which was a more brief tour. So, you know, I don't know what's in the schedule,
okay. But
definitely there is a chance of coming back. You know, I hope so. It was close. Back in, I think, was it 2015 or something like that? It was really close. But for some reason, the whole thing got never materialized. There was talk about a co-headlining thing with another European band, and it didn't materialize for I don't know which reason.
Okay. Good to know. Mm. Well, I tell you what, you know, as soon as I hear something about it, I'm buying my tickets because I need to see you guys.
Okay,
again.
That's good
I'm
to know.
So there's going to be one.
There's going to be one person already then.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. Wow. Okay. So we've actually been talking a long time and I'm loving it. So are you okay with time or do you need to run?
I think I need to run now.
Okay. That's fair. So let me ask you one last thing. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with me in the Toilet of Hell. It's been a great honor for me and of course our listeners. Do you have any last thing you'd like to say to our listeners before we go?
I want to thank each and everybody of you. It's wonderful that I get the chance to bring Avantasia to the States for a second time now. Two consecutive tours, and we include North America. I don't take it for granted because I know this type of music is not really flavor of the week over there.
Absolutely.
So I'm really looking forward of seeing all of our fans over there. Everybody who's into that type of music. Tall, short, black, white, Democrats, Republicans, everybody. You can all come, you know.
Open door
gun
policy.
Lovers and, or gun haters, everybody, you know. Come and see the show. See heavy metal show, European heavy metal show. And,
I just love
coming back. I'm very excited about it. And, God bless America.
That was very good.
I've adjusted to the customs, right?
Oh my God. And one last thing before we go, just for my own personal knowledge. Favorite food in America? When you come here, what do you eat?
Is there such a thing as food in America?
You have to look for it.
Well, yeah, no. Seriously, I know there's a lot of food. But you know what, speaking of food? When I was in Los Angeles and Hollywood, I was having dinner at, I wanted to go to that infamous place, Chateau Marmont. You know it?
Yes.
The Chateau Marmont is.
Yeah.
I had the worst food there that I've ever had in America.
Oh, that's so sad.
And it was very pricey, actually. It was cold, and we had a table, like, because probably we didn't really look like very famous people. They probably put us somewhere other there. But that was long ago. Probably the owner has changed and now everything is better. I don't want to be sued by anybody. Right. So that was long ago. Favorite American food, you know, I mean, I've never had a problem with food anywhere. Chicken wings, I have no clue.
Oh my God. I tell you
you know.
When you come to America, I think the thing to notice is that it's such a big country. We have lots of regional things, but we have a lot of immigrants. So I think one of the biggest things for me, if I'm going to advise you on anything in terms of food, look for somewhere small and look for somewhere run by somebody. How can I say this? Look for the immigrants, honestly. Because they're making real good stuff that you never would have expected, especially if you go to New York or Boston, any of these big cities. You know, they have really good food, and I don't want to steer you wrong. I don't want you to think that we're all about chicken wings, because
no, you know, honestly, I don't have. That was a joke when I said, you know, is there such a thing as food in America? I say the same thing when it's about Britain, because they have a reputation. And I love British food, I have to say, because they have a lot of Indians over there. Indian food is terrific.
Exactly.
About America, I have never had any trouble eating something good. Every hotel, they have all great, you know, restaurants. I like a good burger. I like all kinds. I like burritos. I like a New York style pizza. I can have everything. I like Caesar salad, you know. Sometimes I remember the first tour I did in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It was, in Germany, we have that culture that the band gets nourished, wined and dined at the place.
Yes.
This is not very, in clubs, it's not very customized or not very common in the U.S.
Yes.
So we usually got $20 and go out and find something to eat. And most of the time I went to Subway's because that was fast.
God.
And I knew what was in there. There was a piece of bread, there was all kinds of greens, and something that resembled chicken.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was something I could deal with. You know, that was the first tour. But, you know, I never had a problem with food in America, never.
Good, I'm glad. Next time I see you, I'm bringing you pupusas. I don't know if you've ever had them before. They're from El Salvador, and they're like a tortilla full of meat and cheese, and I think you're going to love it, so... Look forward to that.
Okay,
yeah.
I'll see.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, well, I'm gonna definitely let you go now because I've taken enough of your time, and I just really want to thank you so much for talking to us and talking to me. This has been a great day.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for talking to me and for being interested and spreading the word, and see you on tour.
I will see you on tour. Have a good day.
Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
You're listening to 66.6 FM, Radio TOVH, The Flush.